This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.
This year's spring budget was hotly anticipated, so I'm joined on today's Property Patter by Mark White from our real estate team and Liz Hughes from our tax team to discuss some of the key points for those of us interested in the property market. So let's crack on. There's quite a bit to get through. Mark, let's start with you. Was this a positive budget, would you say, for the property market?
Thanks, Emma. I think for the commercial property market, it was difficult to see too much of an impact with this particular budget. There was an announcement about investments, so it's Barking, Canary Wharf, Cambridge, which is good for example, the life sciences sector. There was probably the headline announcement that was relevant to the commercial market was the abolition of multiple dwellings relief. It certainly from investors in, for example, the private rented sector, the multiple dwellings relief lowers the SDLT charge when buying two or more dwellings in single or linked transactions. And that relief was introduced to encourage investment into the space by, in theory, giving a material tax break. The government's analysis suggested the tax break didn't work, so they've abolished it, or so they'll abolish it, and that may mean that in some cases investors are going to look at, for example, corporate acquisitions rather than simple asset acquisitions if other tax considerations balance out to offset what will be an uplift in the SDLT they have to pay. There was also an announcement that the government would consider extending full expensing to leasing. So tenants who expend money on qualifying items for capital allowances can get the same tax break as freeholders. But that was couched that it will only come when the finances allow. So it feels quite aspirational. But other than that, on the commercial property side, not too much to be said, really.
No, as you say, it did feel like a budget, perhaps a bit more for the residential market. And in fact, for those who are listening who are not at all interested in the residential property market, which I don't imagine is many, but we will put on our website when we publish this podcast, where we pick up perhaps a bit later on commercial property. So I think there's more to talk about initially on the residential side, as you say. So let's start with that, and perhaps the end of the holiday let scheme that seemed to be in all the news reports yesterday. Liz, perhaps you'd explain for our listeners what are the changes in that area.
Thanks, Emma. Well, the change to the furnished holiday let rules will definitely be very unwelcome for landlords who are renting out their properties as holiday lets. Under the rules as they stand at the moment, landlords with furnished holiday lets are treated as traders, and that means that they can claim relief from capital gains tax, so reliefs like business asset disposal relief. And they also are able to claim capital allowances on the furniture in their properties. These advantages are all going to fall away from April next year. The only thing, other thing to say about this is that it will really level the playing field with other landlords who simply rent their houses and flats on long-term leases.
And Mark, what's the aim behind those changes? And do you think they're going to work?
I think that there is some commentary that they'll lead to an increase in housing supply by encouraging landlords who are currently getting quite a beneficial tax treatment to actually repurpose their holiday let as a straightforward rental, as Liz says. It kind of levels the playing fields. So there's no real benefit anymore to having one or t'other. But if that does transpire, bear in mind where a lot of these are, I think the impact will largely be felt in Westminster and Cornwall.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that the government anything but to avoid building houses itself. Let's have a look at another change which may impact residential property. I was quite interested to see about the cut in CGT. Liz, again, perhaps if you don't mind explaining what's the plan change here.
Well, there's a reduction in the rate of capital gains tax for residential property sales by 4%, which takes the rate down to 24% with immediate effect. However, it's not something that will affect the majority of homeowners, as gains on the sale of your main residence are exempt in most cases. It will be a benefit to higher rate taxpayers who are selling second homes or buy-to-let properties. It's another measure by the government that's designed to incentivise sales.
And Mark, do you think that's going to work?
Well, again, some commentators have queried whether it will increase housing supply by encouraging landlords to sell up, particularly when you consider that holiday let scheme being abolished as well. I think there's a year difference, so that the cut in CGT, Liz is going to now correct me if I get the dates wrong. I think the CGT is 2024 and the holiday let, I can see her nodding, that's good. The holiday let scheme will come to an end in 2025. So in that year, there's potentially a benefit to disposing of your asset. Whether that actually happens, it kind of feels unlikely. A lot of landlords in that space are in there for the long haul anyway. It feels unlikely we'll see that kind of upsurge when you consider there was very limited movement on SDLT in the budget, which is something that a lot of people were champing at the bit for. So there's a lot of noise about SDLT. Some people more in hope than expectation, I think, suggesting it should be abolished. That didn't happen, clearly. So other than the abolition of multiple dwellings relief, there wasn't much in the budget on that side to get excited about. So I'm not sure it will make a huge difference, to be honest.
No, I mean, from where I stand, I was thinking it just doesn't sound like enough of a reduction to really lead to a change. I remember a surveyor saying to me a long time ago that he thought the answer back then to not enough housing supply was to just get rid of CGT, on those sorts of sales. And he felt quite confident lots of landlords would get rid at that point and put them all on the market. I kind of feel like, yes, 4%, I'm just not sure that really cuts it, no pun intended. And the abolition of multiple dwellings relief was an interesting announcement. Was that a surprise? What's the impact going to be, do you think?
Well, the government had consulted on changes to the MDR rules. They were looking to bring them back in line with their original aims. So it was no surprise that there were some changes to MDR being made in the budget. The original intention behind the multiple dwellings relief rules was to keep stamp duty land tax costs down for investors and developers who were buying a number of houses or flats in one transaction or in several linked transactions. But in practice, the relief had been used frequently by individuals who were buying a main house, say with something like a granny annex or staff accommodation. So although the change was expected, it was surprising that the relief was abolished entirely. There'd been a consultation back in 2022 that had considered four different proposals, each of which would have limited the availability of the relief, bringing it more back in line with its original aim. But no, they chose to abolish it instead.
Yes, they certainly did. And so where does that leave developers and investors buying a number of flats or houses now?
Well, in the short term, MDR is still available if the SDLT becomes payable before the 1st of June this year, 2024. And the relief will also remain available for contracts that have been signed on or before the 6th of March 2024, provided that those contracts haven't been varied. But looking in the longer term, the best developers, investors will want to use the lower non-residential rates of SDLT where possible, because that will give them a maximum rate of SDLT of 4% rather than a maximum of 17% under the residential rates. The way that they can do this is to get into non-residential rates. It would be available for transactions or series of linked transactions where both the residential property and non-residential property are purchased within the same deal, and or in situations where there are six or more dwellings being purchased within one deal.
Sounds to me, Liz, as if people are heading into that direction, just need to talk to you. there's a lot to digest there, isn't there? and one of the key headlines, of course, was everybody was talking about it last night again, was the abolition of the non domiciled regime. What impact do we think that's going to have on the property market?
I'll take this one. So there is, I think, some concern that by shortening the window before individuals are taxed on their worldwide income, that there'll be a knock-on effect on the prime resi market, with potential movers to the UK looking elsewhere. We'll need to see how the people affected react. For those who are settled in the UK already, it's a big step to leave. You know, not everyone does everything for tax purposes. For those who are looking to move in, there'll still be a four-year window to do so, to enjoy the benefits of the regime. But yeah, there may be a flight to jurisdictions with less stringent regimes. You may also see a consequential knock-on effect to the commercial property market, because those kind of individuals also represent a subset of investors in the market. So, you know, there may be some impacts. You'd expect there to be a limited impact on those buying second homes, who themselves are a significant buyer of prime residential. But my feeling on this one is it was going to happen. It was a Labour policy that the Conservative Party have co-opted. It was going to happen at some point in the next 12 months, if I put my Mystic Meg robes on, based on the current direction of travel. So I think there's a potential impact, but it was always going to happen.
I love your Mystic Meg robes, Mark. In fact, well, we should call you Mystic Mark going forward. Mystic, yeah, Mark.
I'll get in touch with the trademark guys, and we'll get that. We'll get the paperwork in motion.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, it is interesting to me, and I agree with you completely as well. You know, there's always a lot of commentary around this, but I also agree with you that I don't think people make, I don't think a lot of people really make life choices around tax break, you know, purely around tax breaks. I mean, they're not here for the weather, that's for sure. You know, we do, you know, we're very good at being down on ourselves in this country, aren't we? But actually, you know, there's, you know, good schools, good food, you know, there's a lot to be positive about. And I'm sure there's a lot of reasons that people like coming over here. And I agree with you. It'll be very interesting, I think, to see the impact of that one. Let's go back to commercial property, which we touched on briefly at the start, because, Mark, I know you said there wasn't much in this budget for those who deal with commercial property, but perhaps let's finish up by looking at the impact there. I know there was a lot of chatter pre-budget about business rates. Did Jeremy Hunt do anything on those?
He didn't. The hospitality industry in particular is going to be very disappointed the Chancellor didn't take any action on business rates. So the pub sector has been lobbying hard for significant business rates reform. The levy represents a really significant cost to those businesses. They also feel, as a sector, that they tend to overpay, and that the method of valuation is flawed. So there was a real, I think, again, more in hope than expectation, sort of lobbying campaign to get business rates looked at. But unfortunately, no announcements on that front. So it does look like that sector in particular is going to be squeezed again.
Yeah, it's so difficult for businesses, isn't it? In the moment, it's still a continuing challenge. And finally, Liz, I saw mention of a reserved investor fund. What's that?
Well, the Reserved Investor Fund, or RIF, is a new low-cost and flexible fund for institutional and professional investors. Most RIFs are expected to be able to invest in a wide range of assets, including real estate. And it's expected to be of great interest as a vehicle to hold commercial property and or shares in REITs. So in addition to the standard regime, there are going to be three types of restricted RIFs. The first will be property-rich funds with at least 75% of the value of the fund being derived from UK property. Secondly, there'll be restricted funds that are only open to investors that are exempt from capital gains. And finally, non-property funds that do not invest in UK property or property-rich companies. The RIF is expected to be an attractive investment vehicle that will be tax transparent, so that the investors are effectively in the same position as if they had invested directly into the property or the assets of the fund.
Oh, good. Well, that's an interesting one for people to get their heads around. It's always good when there's something new and interesting to report on. Well, thank you both for summarising these property highlights from the budget. There's a lot to digest there, and I'm sure our great listeners will be very grateful for the steer on those. Thank you as ever to our listeners for joining us. Whilst we're here, I will just say, please do keep your ideas coming for future podcasts. Hopefully some of you have recognised topics that you have suggested. We're always open to suggestions. So please do send them in. And in the meantime, wish you all well and look forward to speaking to you soon again.
This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.